Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 852, titled Think Different. The Foxes Aren't Guarding the Hen House, They Are the Hen House. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This is being recorded on June 28th of the year 2015. Hi there, boys and girls. It's time for some more fun, because it's time for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. Well, as the inimitable, or perhaps inimitable, introduction indicates, we are once again going to be discussing some of the many aspects of the intelligence operation fronted for by Edward Snowden, the fellow I call Eddie the Friendly Spook. I also nickname him the Peach Fuzz Fascist, because when you look not only at Eddie Snowden's personal political views, but also the forces around him, you find people who are as far to the right as you can possibly get. And we're going to be looking at that in this program. I also call him the Obverse Oswald, because just like Lee Harvey Oswald, who was trafficked around under a left cover and then framed for the assassination of President Kennedy and killed before he could defend himself, Edward Snowden has been trafficked around as a hero of the people, only instead of being portrayed as a villain and disposed of, Snowden has been portrayed as a hero. I think from the distance afforded from late June of 2015, we can take a look at the Snowden op in a very clear light. Now the Trans-Pacific Partnership and a similar free trade deal with the EU have been fast-tracked. At the same time, there is growing military confrontation between the U.S. and China, and between the U.S. and NATO and Russia. If you look at what Snowden did, he traveled to China and Hong Kong just as President Obama was meeting with President Xi of China, thereby splashing cold water on any potential rapprochement between China and the U.S., and preparatory to a worsening of both economic and military relations. And then Snowden then goes from one renowned bastion of internet freedom and civil liberties, China, to Russia, another world-renowned bastion of civil liberties and internet freedom. And again, I don't pass judgment on either China or Russia. I don't think I have any illusions about them, but both are facing active destabilization campaigns involving, among other elements, Muslim Brotherhood Islamic fascists. When Snowden went to Russia, and just like Jacob Applebaum of WikiLeaks appears to have gotten Snowden from Hawaii to Hong Kong, Sarah Harrison of WikiLeaks appears to have certainly shepherded Snowden from Hong Kong to Russia. It was Snowden's appearance in Russia that drove the last nail into the coffin of President Obama's reboot with Russia. Recall that the Obama State Department was initially trying to improve relations with Russia. However, now that seems like the most distant of prospects. I would point out again that Snowden goes to China and helps to splash cold water on any possible rapprochement there, just as Obama was meeting with President Xi. Then when Obama goes to Europe to meet with Angela Merkel and other EU heads of state, Glenn Greenwald, who we'll be talking about, leaks information about NSA spying on Germany, thereby worsening relations there. Then just as Obama is preparing to meet with President Putin, Snowden goes from Hong Kong to Russia and helps to deep six the summit meeting between Obama and Putin, not unlike the way the downing of the U-2 spy plane helped to beat six the summit conference between then U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower and then Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev. That, by the way, blamed on Lee Harvey Oswald. In this program, we're going to be taking a look at something that I have been hammering away at in connection with the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, and this is in connection with the shootings in Charleston, South Carolina, because the very political forces that are embodied by Edward Snowden and the libertarian elements behind him and that have been fronted for by Glenn Greenwald as an attorney are the very elements that appear to have inspired Dylann Roof to do what he appears to have done. Again, I can't stress strongly enough that Edward Snowden, Glenn Greenwald, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and the Snowden Law are part of the same operation. They are the opposite of what we have been told. We're going to be taking a look at just how the sort of Team Snowden, to coin the term, is basically at one, and part of the same fabric that appears to have inspired Dylann Roof, the neo-Confederate movement, people who advocate slavery, the Trayvon Martin shooting, among others. We're also going to be taking a look at how Snowden and Ron Paul were honored at the Students for Liberty Libertarian Student Organization this past February. That organization is funded by the Koch brothers, by Google to an extent, and has, again, the same forces, that the same technocratic fascist forces behind it that we looked at last week. Much of the program that we're going to be doing in many ways underscores one of the reasons that I am so supportive of the NSA, and I am very supportive of NSA vis-a-vis the Snowden affair, just as I am very supportive of Russia vis-a-vis the Ukraine confrontation, and I believe they are part of the same operation. The Ukraine Maidan coup was financed in part by Pierre Omidyar, who is underwriting Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras' new journalistic undertakings. I'm sort of an old guy, okay? And a lot of what is taking place on the tech frontier looks to me like things that I heard about in science fiction. They are surreal and as miraculous seeming as they are, and it's just amazing. They also are fraught with the most incredible dangers, and I pointed out last week that the tech firms have been very, very successful at marketing themselves as bastions of enlightenment, and yet they are not. And when we're talking about the things we're talking about, facial recognition software being developed by Microsoft and Facebook, of all people, that can identify a human being to within a very, very narrow range of biometric specifications. And when we're talking about a smartphone being used to hack into a jet airliner's electronics and take control of it, when we have a wikified society with nuclear power plants and various things available courtesy of the internet to a hacker with the proper skills, then when you have things like nanotechnology that Google is developing, in which microscopic machines will be injected into people's bloodstreams, and those in turn will interface with presumably internet technology to permit early warning signs of cancer and heart disease and other serious ailments to be detected. Now, I think under the right conditions, that could be a wonderful thing. But Google also is helping to underwrite the very people that were pushing the King versus Burwell decision that was ruled in favor of the Affordable Care Act by the Supreme Court this past week. When you have Google developing this amazing technology, and Apple is doing something remarkable in the field of health as well, and these same companies are also opposing the Affordable Care Act, you know, do you really want them to have microscopic machines in your bloodstream that can hook up to the internet, even if the companies themselves are not malevolently oriented? their technology can be hacked. And as we looked at in a wonderful article by David Golumbia, that's G-O-L-U-M-B-I-A, from uncomputing.org, the people like Julian Assange, White and Black Hat, the coders, walk the same turf as big tech, Apple, Google, Facebook, et al. And indeed, we find heavy overlaps between the people underwriting the campaign of Ron Paul and Rand Paul and these very same companies. Because when you have a society that is that complex, you cannot succumb to post-Reaganoid political dementia. Ronald Reagan observed that, quote, government isn't the solution to your problems. Government is the problem. And that has evolved into the mantra that one hears from people like Edward Snowden, that basically government is bad, but corporations are good. Mussolini, who invented the term fascism, said, il fascismo e il corporatismo. Fascism is corporatism. And to allow these powerful corporations unfettered operations is to invite disaster and a form of technocratic fascism. And basically, that is why this program is titled Think Different. The foxes aren't guarding the hen house. They are the hen house. And when you have a society this complex with powers that would have been deemed accessible only to a god a short time ago, but you have human beings wielding these things. Not only do we need big government, we need very big government with very, very rigorous regulation. Otherwise, we are inviting disaster, because the bottom line is these incredible technologies are being wielded by people who are the same as people who have always been. The bottom line, the human race is the same bunch of femur-cracking, marrow-sucking Neanderthals that we have always been. And with technologies of the type that I'm going to be presenting here, and with their potential abuse by the very big tech firms that are marketing them, and that also march in tune to people like the Neo-Confederate movement, the National Alliance, people like Dylan Roof, amazingly enough, and also who are fellow travelers of the Koch brothers and others, not to mention the fact that these various technologies can be hacked. Imagine if you've got some of this Google nanotechnology in you and somebody hacks in. God only knows what they can do. So we need more rigorous regulation. Now, in For the Record 754 about Citizen Greenwald, and also in For the Record 756, the Paulistinian Libertarian Organization, I have pointed out that when you dolly the camera away from the spotlight that has been focused on Eddie Snowden, Eddie the Friendly Spook, the Peach Fuzz Fascist, the Obverse Oswald, and Citizen Greenwald, that erstwhile defender of human liberty and integrity, you find people who are of the exact opposite stripe, people that believe in slavery, the Neo-Confederate movement, the League of the South. And I would point out that Glenn Greenwald, as an attorney, ran interference for the leaderless resistance strategy. He ran interference for organizations that specifically advocate the type of lone wolf, racist terrorism that apparently was used by Dylan Roof, or manifested by Dylan Roof. And when we take a look at what Dylan Roof did and the forces that inspired him to do what he did, these are the forces that underlie Ron Paul, Glenn Greenwald, and Edward Snowden, and Rand Paul as well. One of the things that apparently inspired Dylan Roof was the Trayvon Martin shooting by George Zimmerman. And Dylan Roof was reported to have said to some of the victims in the church that, well, you black people are raping our white women and burglarizing our homes and things, words to that effect. What we're going to be taking a look at is how Ron Paul helped to establish the template, the political template for the Trayvon Martin shooting and for the leaderless resistance strategy. Among the people that Glenn Greenwald defended pro bono was the National Alliance, the publisher of the Turner Diaries and books like Hunter that are specifically intended as how-to manuals. Hunter is dedicated to Joseph Paul Franklin and is specifically intended as sort of a how-to manual, although it's a novel, a how-to manual to inspire lone wolf racist killers like Dylann Roof. And what Glenn Greenwald did was to run legal interference for civil suits against those types of organizations. This is often misunderstood. It was not a question of Glenn Greenwald defending against the criminalization of free speech. Greenwald was doing was defending people who were facing civil suits for having advocated mayhem that people who had read that advocacy had put into practice.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing in, but by no means exclusively, economic and financial matters.
Specifically, this is not like the ACLU defending the American Nazi Party's right to march in Skokie, Illinois. That is a Chicago suburb with a large Jewish population. The ACLU defended the American Nazi Party's right to march there under the rubric of free speech. This is different. It's not that the type of advocacy that the National Alliance undertakes is illegal. However, basically, if someone advocates violence against racial minorities or religious minorities, you know, Jews, blacks, gays, whoever, that is still legal under the Constitution. However, if someone is inspired by your exercise of free speech to go out and shoot people like Dylann Roof was, well, then you are deemed as having civil liability for that. This is not a criminalization of free speech, but rather you are deemed responsible for your actions. If you leave a rake with the teeth up on your property and someone steps on that and injures themselves, you bear civil liability for your actions. In counterpoint to the libertarian philosophy that really, although it can certainly attract many people of goodwill, at bottom, it is sort of a backdoor to fascism. When you have no more rules, only the very powerful will get their way, and they will impose their will on others. If I were going to mint a school of political ideology, it would be responsibilitarians. You are responsible for your actions. And what Greenwald did that was so wrong and so evil was to provide legal precedent for people to advocate racial mayhem of the type that Dylann Roof put into effect, and they would not be able to be sued for doing this. Quite literally, Glenn Greenwald, though certainly not legally, but philosophically, politically, and I dare say karmically or spiritually, is an accessory after the fact to what took place in Charleston. So is Ron Paul. We're going to begin with an article called Baltimore and the Walking Dead by Mark Ames, AMAS of Pando Daily, of May 1st of 2015. What we're going to be looking at is how Rand Paul, after the 1992 riots in Los Angeles, helped to set the template for, on the one hand, the Trayvon Martin shooting by George Zimmerman, and also what Dylann Roof put into effect in South Carolina. And again, as I've explained so many times, when you dolly the camera to the right, and that's bloody well where the camera should go when you're dealing with Greenwald, Snowden, Julian Assange, who's a bird of the same feather, and Ron Paul, you find people who believe in slavery. You find the League of the South, the neo-Confederate movement, and some of the very worst people in the world. So consider how Glenn Greenwald, as an attorney running interference for the liberalist resistance strategy, and Ron Paul helped to set the template for what we saw in Charleston. Again, Baltimore and the Walking Dead by Mark Ames, Pando Daily, May 1st, 2015. Skipping down. So when Rand Paul went on Laura Ingraham's radio program to blame Baltimore on black culture and values and, quote, lack of fathers, unquote, the libertarian whom Time called the most interesting man in politics was merely rehashing 25-year-old mainstream Republicrat bigotries, the very same bigoted wrong assumptions that led to all of the disastrous policies we're now paying for today. Which brings me to the libertarians of 1992, skipping down. In 1992, the most famous libertarian of all, Ron Paul, was still between congressional stints when the riots in Los Angeles erupted, but he did run a profitable libertarian newsletter, the Ron Paul Political Report, to keep his ideas alive. Shortly after the L.A. riots, Ron Paul put out a special issue on racial terrorism, offering his libertarian analysis of what he termed black terrorism, unquote. The criminals who terrorize our cities in riots and on every non-riot day are not exclusively young black males, but they largely are. As children, they are trained to hate whites, to believe that white oppression is responsible for all black ills, to, quote, fight the power, unquote, to steal and loot as much money from the white enemy as possible. The cause of the riots is plain, barbarism. If the barbarians cannot loot sufficiently through legal channels, i.e. the riots being the welfare state minus the middleman, they resort to illegal ones, to terrorism. Trouble is, few seem willing to stop them. The cops have been handcuffed, skipping down again. We're constantly told that it is evil to be afraid of black men, but it is hardly irrational. Black men, and think about Dylan Roof's statements to the parishioners who he just had gunned down. Black men commit murders, rapes, robberies, muggings, burglaries, all out of proportion to their numbers, unquote. I think we can safely assume that 95% of the black males in major U.S. cities are semi-criminal or entirely criminal. Unquote. A few months later, in October of 1992, Dr. Paul explained how he taught his own family, presumably including his favorite son, Rand Paul, how to defend themselves and even murder what Dr. Paul called, quote, hip-hop, unquote, carjackers, again quoting, the urban youth who play unsuspecting whites like pianos, unquote, and quoting from Paul's newsletter, what can you do? More and more Americans are carrying a gun in the car. An ex-cop I know advises that if you have to use a gun on a black youth, you should leave the scene immediately, disposing of the wiped-off gun as soon as possible. Such a gun cannot, of course, be registered to you, but one bought privately through the classifieds, for example. Beyond that, the Libertarian Party's political solution to African-American poverty and injustice was to abolish all welfare programs, public schools, and anti-discrimination laws like the Civil Rights Act. This was the solution promoted by an up-and-coming libertarian, Jacob Hornberger, H-O-R-N-B-E-R-G-E-R, who this week co-hosted an event with Ron Paul and Glenn Greenwald. Hornberger believes that 19th century antebellum slave era America was, quote, the freest society in history, unquote. And again, think about what we've been seeing. Think about the Trayvon Martin case. Think about all of the gunning down of black folks. And specifically, it was looking into the Trayvon Martin case that appears to have helped to launch Dylan Roof on his indoctrination with violent white supremacist ideology. He certainly was influenced by the neo-Confederate movement, by the National Alliance and the Turner Diaries, and we'll talk about that. And again, I can't stress strongly enough that the forces behind Edward Snowden, people like Glenn Greenwald, Ron Paul, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, they are at one with the political forces that helped to generate what took place in Charleston. another article also by Mark Ames, also from Pando Daily, this from February 20th of 2015. Snowden praised for fighting government surveillance by group that loves corporate surveillance. And this is about the Students for Liberty, which is a libertarian student organization funded by, among others, of course, the Koch brothers, funded by Peter Thiel, or certainly very close to Peter Thiel, and at one with all kinds of people. And at this function, they had Edward Snowden Skyped in from Moscow, and then they had Ron Paul and honored him as well. Ron Paul was Edward Snowden's presidential candidate of choice. He echoed his views on things like Social Security and bringing back the gold standard. Ron Paul's political campaign in 2012 was largely bankrolled by Peter Thiel. Edward Snowden's first attorney was a guy named Bruce Fine, who was the chief legal counsel for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, having apparently been introduced to him by Rand Paul. They introduced to Edward Snowden and the Snowden family by Rand Paul. The chief blogger for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign was a guy named Jack Hunter, who was chairman of the League of the South, which believes in slavery, thinks the South should secede again. He is now a top aide to Rand Paul. So again, that's why I have this title, Think Different. The foxes aren't guarding the hen house. They are the hen house. Again, Snowden praised for fighting government surveillance by group that loves corporate surveillance. Mark Ames, Pando Daily, February 20th of this year. Skipping down. All of which makes it slightly shocking to discover the identity of another recent winner of Students for Liberty's big award, Peter Thiel, the founder of one of the NSA's biggest contractors, Palantir Technologies. If a government is trying to dig through private records and aggregate a dossier, Palantir is the company they call, unquote. By the way, Peter Thiel, in addition to being the largest stockholder in Palantir and one of its founders, is also the largest stockholder in Facebook, skipping down. So what exactly is Students for Liberty? According to its website, quote, Students for Liberty has grown into the largest libertarian student organization in the world, with over 800 student leaders supporting over 1,350 student groups representing over 100,000 students on all inhabited continents, unquote. Like most of the libertarian nomenclatura, the group gets most of its money from, drumroll please, the Koch brothers. Google, another corporation which has worked closely with the U.S. government, recently joined the list of Students for Liberty's big corporate sponsors. Students for Liberty's board of advisors includes such heroes of freedom as His Serene Highness Prince von Liechtenstein, whose royal family rules over an exclusive offshore banking tax haven favored by global billionaires who think Switzerland is too transparent. I would also note that, as we have seen in the past, the House of Liechtenstein is very close to the House of Habsburg, and a distant relative of Prince Hans Adam, or the Prince of Liechtenstein, Martin Wachter, was headed up one of the Bank Altaqua fronts, part of one of the companies associated with Bank Altaqua, which was incorporated in Vaduz Liechtenstein. Al-Qaeda had an unlimited line of credit with the Bank Altaqua.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing in, but by no means exclusively, economic and financial matters.
As I noted in previous programs about the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, the Ludwig von Mises Institute and people associated with it love Liechtenstein, which is a tiny little country with only about 32,000 people. It's a lean, mean money laundering machine tied to the underground Reich, tied to Al-Qaeda, tied to the House of Habsburg. So again, when you're talking about Students for Liberty, You don't want to see the Liechtenstein royal family in there, and they bloody well are. Continuing. Indeed, Thiel's presence was everywhere at the Students for Liberty Schmoozer this year, even if the man himself was absent. After Snowden's Skyped appearance, libertarian celebrity Ron Paul took the stage with longtime Cato Institute board director and Fox News truther Andrew Napolitano. Ron Paul's 2012 campaign for president, supported by Edward Snowden and Glenn Greenwald, was almost entirely funded by Peter Thiel. The following night, Students for Liberty featured Ron Paul's stubby heir, Senator Rand Paul, whose run for president in 2016 is being funded by Thiel's co-founder at Palantir, Joe Lonsdale, who serves on Rand Paul's finance team and co-hosted Silicon Valley fundraisers. So Rand Paul is being bankrolled in no small measure by one of the co-founders of Palantir, along with Peter Thiel, who, by the way, not only like others at the Ludwig von Mises, not Peter Thiel, like those at the Ludwig von Mises Institute, is explicitly opposed to democracy because he believes that democracy is inimical to wealth creation, and Peter Thiel also is opposed to women being allowed to vote. I mean, that is how far out these people are. They are something else. Now, again, about how the Ron Paul, Glenn Greenwald milieu influenced Dylann Roof, and how the clients for which Glenn Greenwald ran legal interference have inspired Dylann Roof. From Yahoo News of June 20th of 2015, Charleston suspect Dylann Roof's manifesto discovered online, this by Jason Sickles, Liz Goodwin, and Michael Walsh. And skipping down, we read, Benjamin Crump, CRUMP, attorney for Trayvon Martin's family and a leading national voice in civil rights issues, said he was troubled to learn the manifesto mentioned the Martin case. Skipping down again. Dozens of images on the site show Roof in historic locations like a Confederate soldier cemetery and a slave burial ground. I would also point out there are pictures in which he's holding a Confederate flag. Skipping down again. The symbol 1488, shown in Roof's photos, is a number that has been adopted by white supremacists according to the Southern Poverty Law Center's racist skinhead glossary. The 88 refers to H, the eighth letter of the alphabet, and is a symbol for Heil Hitler. The 14 refers to a 14-word slogan popularized by David Lane, a white supremacist serving a 190-year sentence in the murder of a Jewish talk show host. I would add, he has since passed away. Quote, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. David Lane was driving the getaway car for the murder of Alan Berg that was popularized in the movie Talk Radio. And that group, the order, was specifically inspired by the Turner Diaries. That is one of the novels that was put out by National Vanguard Books, the publisher for Glenn Greenwald's client, the National Alliance. And they are intended, those books are intended as instructional manuals, although they're actually novels. And the Turner Diaries was the model for the order, including David Lane, who drove the getaway car for the murder of Alan Berg. And also it was the ideological template for Timothy McVeigh and others in the Oklahoma City bombing. I would note that one of the things that takes place in the Turner Diaries is the bombing of basically the destruction of the World Trade Center in New York. The climactic episode of the Turner Diaries is a low-level suicide aerial attack on the Pentagon. Of course, that is just a novel, and I'm just a wacky conspiracy theorist from California. We know nothing like that could happen in real life. You know, bringing down the World Trade Center, that's ridiculous. A low-level suicide aerial attack on the Pentagon, that's nuts. By the way, that attack on the Pentagon takes place on the German Day of Destiny, which is November 9th. A German or any other European would write the date November 9th as 9/11. So again, note that among the influences that apparently inspired Dylann Roof to do what he did were the teachings of the National Alliance and things like the Turner Diaries. That is one of the people for whom Glenn Greenwald ran legal interference. By the way, Combat 14, the paramilitary wing of the Ukrainian fascist group Svoboda that held many ministries in the transitional government following the Maidan coup last year. Its combat wing is called Combat 14, also named after the 14 words of David Lane. I mentioned that Ron Paul and Glenn Greenwald, Ron Paul and Rand Paul and the forces behind Edward Snowden are inextricably linked with the neo-Confederate movement, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, one of the founts of the Austrian School of Economics, has very close connections with the League of the South. And Rand Paul, one of Rand Paul's top aides, Jack Hunter, is a former chairman of the League of the South. He was the chief blogger for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign. And again, the chief legal counsel for Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, Bruce Thorne, was Edward Snowden's first attorney and is the attorney for the Snowden family, having set up a nonprofit group with Edward Snowden's father. The League of the South and the neo-Confederate movement in general seems to have been one of the influences on Dylann Roof. Charleston shooting suspect left racist manifesto on website, authorities say. This is by Lenny Bernstein, B-E-R-N-S-T-E-I-N, Sari, S-A-R-I, Horowitz, and Peter Holly of The Washington Post of June 20th of 2015. Skipping down, Pat Hines, H-I-N-E-S, the South Carolina state chairman of the League of the South, an organization that wants southern states to secede from the U.S., said Roof did not appear to belong to any white supremacist group and could have been indoctrinated on the Internet. So again, it may seem incredible. When I talk about the forces for which people like Ron Paul and Glenn Greenwald and also Edward Snowden have fronted, basically they go as far to the right as possible. And again, the ideological fonts which helped to inspire Dylann Roof are at one with these very same people. Now, one of the points I made last week was what I called technocratic fascism, that in big tech you find coders, not just the big companies, but white and black hat hackers, the WikiLeaks crowd, Edward Snowden et al. They walk hand in hand and believe that there are technocratic solutions to the problems of society, and that basically the members of those societies should just get out of the way and let the knowing technocrats fix things. I don't agree with that. One of the reasons why I am so supportive of the NSA, and I think, frankly, that the NSA should be keeping a much closer tab on what's going on in our society vis-a-vis digital technology than some might like. I think other agencies, other federal agencies, should be working with them. NSA is a military-oriented, it's a military agency. Other agencies should be doing the same thing. It's because in the last 15 or so years or 20 years, I couldn't call it sleepwalking, but we have sleep-jogged into an entirely different era of civilization, with the weakification of society, with the Internet, with smartphones, and all kinds of things. We are now in a completely different era of civilization, and with technology as lethal, with nuclear power plants now open to hacking via the Internet, and very possibly by a smartphone, and with other technologies that are, to me, an old guy, like something from science fiction. We not only don't need less government, we need more government and rigorous regulation. Because again, at bottom, the human race is the same bunch of femur-cracking, marrow-sucking Neanderthals we have always been. But now we have capabilities that are almost surreal, and they should be very, very tightly regulated. Things like this are coming online. From the Washington Post of June 11th of 2015, facial recognition technology is everywhere. It may not be legal. It's by Ben Sobel, S-O-B-E-L. It reads in part. Being anonymous in public might be a thing of the past. Facial recognition technology is already being deployed to let brick and mortar stores scan the face of every shopper, identify returning customers, and offer them individualized pricing or find, quote, pre-identified shoplifters, unquote, and, quote, known litigious individuals, unquote. Microsoft has patented a billboard that identifies you as you walk by and serves ads personalized to your purchase history. An app called NameTag claims it can identify people on the street just by looking at them through Google Glass. Privacy advocates and representatives from companies like Facebook and Google are meeting in Washington on Thursday to try to get rules for how companies should use this powerful technology. They may be forgetting that a good deal of it could already be illegal. There are no federal laws that specifically govern the use of facial recognition technology, but while few people know it, and even fewer are talking about it, both Illinois and Texas have laws against using such technology to identify people without their informed consent. That means that one out of every eight Americans currently has a legal right to biometric privacy. And skipping down, how common and how accurate is facial recognition technology? You may not be walking by ads that address you by name, but odds are that your facial geometry is already being analyzed regularly. Law enforcement agencies deploy facial recognition technology in public and can identify someone by searching a biometric database that contains information on as many as one-third of Americans. Companies like Facebook and Google routinely collect facial recognition data from their users, too. Facebook's system operates by default. Google's only works if you opt onto it. Their technology may even be more accurate than the government's. Google's FaceNet algorithm can identify faces with 99.63% accuracy. Facebook's algorithm, DeepFace, gets a 97.25% rating. The FBI, on the other hand, has roughly 85% accuracy in identifying potential matches, though admittedly, the photographs it handles may be harder to analyze than those used by the social networks. Bear in mind that Peter Thiel, the number one financier of Palantir and the number one financier of Ron Paul's 2012 campaign, supported by and overlapping the milieu of Edward Snowden, is the largest stockholder in Facebook as well. Other technologies that just exemplify why I think we need more regulation, bigger government, and the NSA should be part of that, and that's why I support NSA, and frankly, I think you should too. Try this on for size from Wired Magazine of May 14th of 2015. United will reward people who flag security flaws, sort of. It's by Kim Zetter, Z-E-T-T-E-R, reads in part. United Airlines announced this week that it's launching a big bounty program inviting researchers to report bugs in its websites, apps, and online portals. The announcement comes weeks after the airline kicked a security researcher off one of its flights for tweeting about vulnerabilities in the Wi-Fi and entertainment networks of certain models of United planes made by Boeing and Airbus. It's believed to be the first bounty program ever offered by an airline. But curiously, United's announcement doesn't invite researchers to submit the most critical vulnerabilities researchers could find. Those discovered in onboard computer networks such as the Wi-Fi and entertainment systems. In fact, the bounty program specifically excludes, quote, bugs on onboard Wi-Fi entertainment systems or avionics, unquote, And United notes that, quote, any testing on aircraft or aircraft systems such as in-flight entertainment or in-flight Wi-Fi could result in a criminal investigation. Skipping down. Researchers who report vulnerabilities in the airline's websites or apps, however, will be rewarded. How much cash will they receive? None. Instead, United will pay out in mileage points. Skipping down. Last month, we wrote extensively about security researcher Chris Roberts, R-O-B-E-R-T-S, who was detained by FBI agents in New York and later banned from a United flight. Roberts was flying a United Airlines Boeing 737-800 from Chicago to Syracuse when news broke of a government report describing potential security holes in Boeing and Airbus planes. The report from the Government Accountability Office noted that security issues with passenger Wi-Fi networks on several models of aircraft could allow hackers to access critical avionics systems and hijack the flight controls. Skipping down. Also from Wired Magazine of May 15th of 2015, also by Kim Zetter, Z-E-T-T-E-R, feds say that banned researcher commandeered a plane. A security researcher kicked off a United Airlines flight last month after tweeting about security vulnerabilities to its system, had previously taken control of an airplane and caused it to fly briefly sideways, according to an application for a search warrant filed by an FBI agent. Chris Roberts, a security researcher with One World Labs, told the FBI agent during an interview in February that he had hacked the in-flight entertainment system, or IFE, on an airliner and overwrote code on the plane's thrust management computer while aboard the flight. He was able to issue a climb command and make the plane briefly change course, the document says. Quote, he stated that he thereby caused one of the airplane engines to climb, resulting in a lateral or sideways movement of the plane during one of these flights, FBI Special Agent Mark Hurley wrote in his warrant application. He also stated that he used Vortex software after comprising and exploiting or hacking the airplane's networks. He used the software to monitor traffic from the cockpit system. And there is discussion in articles which I don't have time to read to you in the program, but which are in the description for the Record E52, which will be published shortly after the conclusion of the recording of the program. Just to give you an idea about the types of technology, from CNN of April 12th of 2013, hacker says phone app could hijack plane, by Doug Gross. Skipping down, speaking at Black in the Box Security Summit in Amsterdam, Netherlands, Hugo Tesso, T-E-S-O, said Wednesday that he spent 3 years developing Simon, a framework of malicious code that could be used to attack and exploit airline security software and an Android app to run it he calls Planesploit. Using a flight simulator, Tesso showed off the ability to change the speed, altitude, and direction of a virtual airplane by sending radio signals to its in-flight management system. That, again, with a smartphone. Again, we're in a totally new era of civilization. And there are articles discussing this at a greater length in the description for the Record program 852.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site also features many articles not included in programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
More about the kinds of things that are coming into existence. Wired Magazine from March 17th of 2014, an article by Ryan Tate, T-A-T-E. Apple's upcoming health app is the start of something new. Apple is poised to launch a body monitoring app known as HealthBook, tracking everything from sleep to nutrition to exercise to vital signs. That's the word from 9 to 5 Mac, which published a detailed look at the app on Monday, and as described, this project could prove to be a tipping point for mobile healthcare, a computing sector that has long been on the brink of explosive popularity without actually breaking through. Now, just think about what could happen when these things get hacked. And Apple isn't alone. Or think about what could happen when these things are abused. Because, again, these companies aren't benign. An article from The Guardian of October 29th of 2014. Google is developing a cancer and heart attack detecting pill by Samuel Gibbs, G-I-B-B-S. Google is working on a nanoparticle pill that could identify cancers, heart attacks, and other diseases before they become a problem. The pill would contain magnetic particles approximately 10,000 times smaller than the width of a human hair. These tiny particles will have antibodies or proteins attached to them that detect the presence of biomarker molecules inside the body that indicate diseases such as cancer or an imminent heart attack. Well, essentially, the idea is simple. You just swallow a pill with the nanoparticles, which are decorated with antibodies or molecules that detect other molecules, explains Andrew Conrad, head of life sciences inside the Google's Moonshot X Research Lab, to WSJD live conference in California Tuesday. Again, this is nanotechnology that will presumably be hooked up to mobile technology and the Internet. Who is to stop these companies from abusing that or from hackers getting in? Now, again, Google is developing microscopic technology. You take a pill, and then you have nanoelectronics inside of you to tell Google, or anybody else potentially, just what is going on with your body. I think that I'm not a Luddite, and I think that with proper regulation and oversight, which should be absolutely rigorous with a capital A and a capital R for technology like this, these things could be just fantastic. But without that kind of regulation, and the libertarians don't want that at all, this is a blueprint for disaster. Note that Google is developing that. Note what else Google has been involved with. Yet another article by Mark Ames from Pando Daily of March 18th of 2015. Google is helping to fund the group that's trying to kill Obamacare in the Supreme Court. That group is the Competitive Enterprise Institute, or CEI. You can almost guess some of the other people involved with that. The King versus Burwell suit was decided in favor of the Affordable Care Act, but again, not that the Competitive Enterprise Institute that was working against that, and we're working against the Affordable Care Act and working on behalf of the plaintiffs, King, in the King versus Burwell suit. Google is helping to finance that. Skipping down. Still, as we know, Obamacare is still under attack, just as one... Beginning again. Still, as we know, Obamacare is still under attack. Just one pending Supreme Court ruling away from being almost completely dismantled, a decision that could put millions back in the ranks of the uninsured. What is less well known is that the think tank pushing for the death of Obamacare is partly funded by Google. Earlier this month, the New York Times reported on this, quote, obscure think tank, unquote, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, or CEI, and its central role in trying to kill Obamacare, skipping down again. But while the Times did mention that the Competitive Enterprise Institute is largely bankrolled by, surprise, surprise, the Koch brothers, it didn't dig into some of the group's smaller funders. Funders including Silicon Valley giants like Google and Facebook. Bet you didn't realize that when with Facebook with its 90 9 or whatever percent facial recognition accuracy, with Peter Thiel, who doesn't believe in democracy and doesn't think women should vote, and who's also the largest stockholder in Palantir and who bankrolled Ron Paul. You have Facebook and Google funding the Competitive Enterprise Institute that was basically putting most of the funding comes from the Koch brothers, that was opposing the Affordable Care Act. Now, do you really want a company like Google putting nanotechnology inside of you, hooked up to the whatever, mobile technology, the internet, what have you, without proper regulation? Bear in mind, they were helping to finance the group that was working to overturn the Affordable Care Act. With nanotechnology in you, they can handle that themselves. Plus, with technologies like this, hackers can do all kinds of things. Page 7 of the Financial Times of February 15th of 2015 had a review by Hannah Kuchler, K-U-C-H-L-E-R, of a book called Future Games by a guy named Mark Goodman. The review was titled Cops and Hackers, and again on page 7, I'm going to excerpt it. In Future Games, Goodman spells out story after story about technology that has been used for illegal ends, from the Vietnamese gang that was able to buy the personal data of two-thirds of all of the American people to a suspected Chinese state-sponsored attack in which confidential aircraft designs were stolen from the U.S. military. His predictions are often depressingly plausible. Today, for example, we have CryptoLocker software that encrypts data on computers until the user pays a ransom in Bitcoin. Tomorrow, Goodman suggests, the same tactic could be used on a connected home with a smart door lock to prevent a resident returning, or worse still, on an internet-connected medical device such as a pacemaker that could be tampered with to kill someone from afar, or you know, Google nanotechnology or Apple's health book or any of this stuff. And again, as I noted last week, and there's an excerpt of that article here, I would call a seminal article by David Golumbia with the G-O-L-U-M-B-I-A and uncomputing.org of April 23rd of 2015, Tor, Technocracy, and Democracy, has noted basically the technocratic beliefs that underlie people like Edward Snowden and companies like Google and Facebook and others. Just one sentence. Such technocratic beliefs are widespread in our world today, especially in the enclaves of digital enthusiasts, whether or not they are part of the giant corporate digital leviathan. Hackers, civic, ethical, white, and black hat alike, hacktivists, WikiLeaks fans, and Julian Assange, anonymous members, even Edward Snowden himself, walk hand in hand with Facebook and Google in telling us that coders don't just have good things to contribute to the political world, but that the political world is theirs to do with what they want, and the rest of us should just stay out of it. Well, that is easier said than done, but that is at the core of what I call technocratic fascism, and it tends to produce what I called last week post-Reaganoid political dementia. Well, that's all we have time for today, boys and girls. But be sure to tune in next week for another exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, your favorite cartoon character. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie's not like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes For the Record program number 852, Think Different. The foxes aren't guarding the hen house. They are the hen house. Update on the adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. This has been recorded on June 28th of 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.